How would you describe where the board's mind is right now about what they're looking at for the fall?
Well, what we're doing, and I just left one of the meetings here at GHS North. We have 5-6 different committees that are meeting and they're broken down into like elementary, high school, junior high, technology, special education, operations. You know, we've broken them down into different subcommittees to have a whole lot of different minds on this, to look at how are we going to build the best remote plan we can do, how are we going to build the best hybrid, meaning some remote, some in person, and then how can we build the best in-person plan as possible. So the board would really like for us to have options so that we're not just picking one and sticking with it. We'd like to be able to have some flexibility, so as the virus, facts about the virus change, we can slide in from one plan to another, and we want to spend some time educating our students and parents about what those plans look like before we even have to start school.
Is there some sort of deadline or set date where you have to have something in place to, like, submit to, I don't know, for example, the State Board of Education or something like that, where you have to have a plan for what you're going to do in August?
No, there's no deadline like that. So we're just trying to come up with, a broad-based plan in 3 different phases so that we can, as I said, communicate that to parents as fast as possible. Because what I want to make sure I get out today, Cameron, is we said it last night at the board meeting, and I want to say it again. I'm imploring parents to start finding child care options now, because we don't honestly know what August 28th, August 31st is going to look like, but we want everybody to be able to have child care options if that's the option we have to go with.
This is for lack of a better term, but like a worst case scenario, I would think you would kind of plan for would be the totally remote option, right? Because you kind of are more used to the in-person learning. Is that fair to say, or?
Oh, that's right. I mean, we have to look at it from the perspective of how do we have the best remote learning plan as possible, because that's the most foreign to our students, to our staff, to our families. So that's the one that we can't just adapt from an in-person plan. We know how to do in-person learning. So we want to start from the place of how do we get the best remote plan, and then how do we use that remote plan to do a hybrid version, and then how do we do that to go back in person.
What is kind of the makeup of the committees? You've got not only district people, but community members involved in that?
Yes, we do. We have community members and then a lot of staff members and administration and some board members. So we're trying to get a pretty good cross-sectional view of our, you know, what we offer at school. So we've tried to make sure we have, high school, middle school, elementary school, Bright Futures, different subject areas, counselors, outreach workers. We tried to make sure we hit all the broad areas of our district in terms of content providers. And then we also wanted to make sure that we had parents involved that had young children, middle school children, and high school children. So we wanted to make sure that we had that perspective in there as well. So we want to make sure that these committees are a representative cross-section of the district and community.
Are there any concerns about remote learning and how effective of an educational tool it is? Because it will probably be a part of the school year in some fashion, whether it's hybrid for a while or the whole year, or whether it's e-learning. Are there any downsides? I mean, your hands might be tied and you might have to do e-learning, but are there any educational downsides to doing that?
Well, I mean, we all feel that in-person learning is the best if we can do it the way we need to do it. But, you know, the in-person learning that would go on right now would be very different than what people are used to. We'd have to be very strict about how students interacted with each other, the face coverings. The teachers would have to have face coverings, and at the early ages, that would be really problematic. So, yes, the remote learning isn't ideal, but we feel like we can absolutely improve upon what we learned from last year, and we can make the e-learning plan or remote learning plan this year a much more robust experience. probably at least 5 hours a day in terms of whether it's with the teacher or doing learning activities, reading, writing, whatever that is, it would be much more, in terms of rigor, there would be a much more rigorous approach this year if we had to go in the e-learning situation.
And, of course, District 205 is in a unique situation in that you're kind of going through this building shift at the same time. And I'm kind of wondering, especially with the high school and being in modular classrooms, does that, again, I mean, your hands are tied, but does any of those changes that you would have to make because of the building shifts make it more difficult to kind of have a socially distanced environment?
That's a great question. You know, not really. You know, we would be able to do the same type of social distancing in our new buildings as we would have if we'd still been using Gale and Nielsen in addition to these other buildings. You know, we've added on these mobile classrooms that we brought in are actually a lot nicer in terms of creature comforts than opposed to like the second floor at GHS. So that really won't be a concern for ours in terms of how to have another layer of complexity on top of it. So the facilities shouldn't really impact our decision-making one way or the other.
I know a lot of districts have done some sort of survey or outreach to parents. Do you have any sort of, at least anecdotal, if not like data on how parents are feeling about sending their kids back to school or?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. We had three different focus groups that had students and parents and staff in it. We did that about a month ago. And we got that report back a couple weeks ago, and it was 19 pages of anecdotal data from our parents and students and staff about how last year went. We also did a survey of parents and staff about where they felt the best learning environment would be this year with safety in mind. And I will tell you, I was a little bit surprised, Cameron. Our survey results came back that 42% of our parents said they would prefer to just keep their children home this year. And we had a big return. I mean, we had over 1,600 responses, so the sample size was definitely significant in terms of statistical analysis. So that was a bigger number than I thought I would see. And to continue on, we plan to actually ask that question again here in a couple weeks after we release what the learning plans would look like if we were in remote or we were in person or we were in a hybrid situation. So we want to see how that shifts people's thinking. Mm-hmm. Before we would go into a final decision. So, you know, we want to make sure that we do that again to try to get a more accurate picture closer to when school starts in terms of what parents are thinking for sending their children to school.
This might have been before, come out since that last focus group that you did. Do you have any idea if that 40 or so percent that said they would not feel comfortable sending their kids to school, is that fear of the virus or is that, do you know if that's some people that don't want their kids to have to wear a mask all day or adhere to those kinds of things?
That's a great question. We didn't add that into the last one, but you know that will have to be part of this next survey that we'll have to ask them if we mandate you know mask wearing to school, will your child comply with that? Will you send them? You know, we need to know that as well because we really feel strongly that if we are in person, that people are going to have to wear masks.
And there are some students that might have some medical condition where they would not, I guess, have to wear a mask. Is that correct? Or how would you accommodate a student that would have some sort of respiratory issue where they couldn't wear a mask?
Yeah, that's still ongoing. There's some discussions there. I mean, I think if you were asking me today, I believe the sentiment is if they can't wear a mask, then they're just going to need to be staying home in a remote learning setting.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mask really isn't for the person wearing the mask, it's for everybody else. And so if that person that is not wearing the mask has the virus, they could be spreading it to hundreds of people. And so that's obviously a big concern of ours.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's a concern for, you know, staff members, some of whom might be, or, you know, at least in their 30s, 40s, upwards, you know, as you get up there, you're more susceptible to having a adverse effect to it. So have you had, I'm sure the GEA has been involved in conversations about safety, haven't they?
Yes, absolutely. We've been talking to them ongoing.
And let's see, is there anything else that comes to mind specifically about last night's conversation about reopening that you like to underline or hang a lantern on for the public?
Well, I think the thing to that I would want everybody to know is this is still a pretty fluid situation. We've put lots of different people in the process of trying to come up with the best recommendations we can for how we're going to operate school this year. I don't have a crystal ball at this moment, but I would be pretty comfortable in letting parents know that, you know, we're probably going to be in some sort of remote learning for at least some of the year. Now, that may not be at the beginning, but it may be. Just based on what I read in terms of the slope of infection, in terms of what the virus has been doing, I would anticipate that there would have to be some times where it really isn't even our choice, where the state's going to have to go back into phase three, given what I've read, given what I've seen. So, you know, our goal is always going to be in person as long as we can do it safely, but the safety is always going to be the primary goal. That has to be, because, you know, we can work on mitigating and remediating academic problems over time, but we can't remediate or mitigate serious health problems up to and including death. So, you know, we have to look at that first and foremost.
Well, that's why we keep having you on, because we know there's a lot of moving pieces and we're trying to, you know, keep people updated on where those pieces are at. So appreciate your time as always, John.
I really appreciate it, Cameron. And I'll be happy to come on any time I can, because we've really appreciated the patience that our families have shown us. And, you know, we're all trying to navigate this together, and it's going to continue to be an ever shifting landscape. So we're just trying to put together the best plan we can, so if we have to react to it, parents can have some foreknowledge to know what those plans look like before we have to move from one phase to the next.